morning.
Red 10 standing by.
Red 7 standing by.
Red 3 standing by.
Red 6 standing by.
Red 9 standing by.
You're listening to the Ion Cannon Podcast.
Laugh it up, fuzzball.
Your source for entertainment reviews from a galaxy far, far away.
This is it.
Hey, laser clankers!
Welcome to the Ion Cannon Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Steven, and I'm joined by my friends and co-hosts, Tom and William. Guys, I'm really excited today. We've got a special guest. He is a Tory from England, I believe. His name is Terry, but he's kind of a bad dude. So we're going to have to review.
No, my lord.
This is even.
Oh, God. That is.
This is what
that may be a new low. That may be a new low, and that's saying something.
If I had a balloon, I would be stretching that thing right now. That was terrible.
Look, I'm a host. I'm about ready to turn us off after that.
I don't know. The clapping that's all around me. People are really excited by that. I don't know what you're talking about.
I will give you a 5, but that's the best I can do because it was
5
so
out
bad.
Of 5. I mean, okay, Tom. If you
no 5 out of 10, okay. 5 out of 10
it was unnecessary.
I'm sorry.
This is what you both get for starting every episode with, "Oh man, Steven, can't wait to see what pun you come up with this time."
At some point, yeah. Maybe we just get rid of it because this is not.
I mean, to be fair, William, you.
I started it a long time ago. I know.
No, William, you do the editing. So if this doesn't show up and the episode just starts with the news, you know.
I think we should because I have a feeling even Peel would be a little bit depressed if this did not make the actual episode. Yeah.
Well, we should probably get into it. Before we talk about this week's episode of The Bad Batch, though, we have a couple interesting things. First, we record these episodes before they air, so we, you know, before the episode guide has been dropped. So some of this we're using our best knowledge and we're guessing, and turns out actually our theory last week was right. It was indeed Teth. We looked at it and we're like, we're pretty sure this is Teth, right? But we didn't have final confirmation, and turns out, yep, it was Teth. So I don't know about you guys, I am very excited. It's really cool. I like that they returned to the planet we saw, that was featured so heavily in the original Clone Wars movie. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what it means that we all recognize that, like, kind of off the bat, but I'm just gonna consider that a good thing. I think
we know our Star Wars.
We do. That was nice. Also, we got some exciting news courtesy of StarWars.com. I think this was actually technically in time for the last episode, but we just barely missed it due to recording. Obi-Wan Kenobi and Andor are heading to 4K Ultra HD and Blu-ray on April 30th. So this, I don't know about you guys. I picked up, you know, The Mandalorian seasons 1 and 2 on 4K UHD. They released it in, I want to say, December, right? And it had some special features and stuff. And yeah, you can get them on Disney Plus, but a physical release is always nice just to have, especially for Star Wars, right? I'm mostly a digital guy, but for Star Wars, I like the physical copies too. Plus all the special features, they look the best. So I don't know about you guys, but I'm really excited to re-experience Andor season 1 and then, of course, Obi-Wan Kenobi with all, like, in all its glory with the special features and everything. You guys excited about these? Nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to miss. You know, I wish these things were a little more regular and, like, we knew when they were going to come, but I'm glad they at least keep delivering on them.
Yeah, so. Me too. Notably, you know, they both include some special features, right? About like the duel of Obi-Wan versus Vader or some of the villains designing the galaxy. But the thing I'm most excited about, maybe the director's commentary from Deborah Chow on the finale of the series. We have not gotten a commentary on a Star Wars release in a long time. So I like that they're going back to these director's commentaries. It's really cool. Yeah.
It's a nice touch for sure.
It is. And then, of course, on Andor season 1, we've got a documentary about actually a 2-part series on Ferrix and how they, you know, they created the series origins, Aldani's rebel heist, another special feature about Coruscant and Mon Mothma and Luthen Rail. And then, of course, unsurprisingly, one on Narkita 5 and One Way Out and the VFX breakdown. So, yeah, I will definitely be picking these up. I am very, very excited for these releases. Tom, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the best thing about it is that, you know how a lot of the digital media, they decide to sit there and start pulling shows this way. The best thing about it, if anything were to happen to these, let's say in the future, you still have a physical copy of the show, so you will always be able to see them.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that I think is the best thing about it.
I agree. And we haven't had that happen to Star Wars, and no. Knock on wood, that we won't that happen.
So far.
I mean, Star Wars is a pretty major franchise, and so one would hope, but it is nice to have just in case. And you know, if you want that, the streaming quality is pretty dang good on Disney Plus, I have to say. Mm-hmm. Hulu, not so much. I've noticed Hulu's quality has been going, it's been really iffy, but on multiple devices. But Disney Plus has been pretty good. That said, 4K UHD is still the best way to watch. So
hard to beat.
Yeah.
Yep.
And this makes me very excited to go back and rewatch the two series, because you know, it's been almost a year since, or more since we've watched them, and they're just so good. They're so good.
Andor especially. My
yes.
God.
But even like Kenobi, while it's not perfect, right? There's much I loved about that series, and seeing Ewan McGregor and Hayden Christensen back, and of course, young Leia, and there's a lot I loved about that series.
Oh, yeah, I'm not knocking the
series. Oh, no, of course.
Both series were outstanding, but there is something that there is. Obi-Wan had it, its specialness, but there was something really special about Andor.
Yeah.
That you just, once it hit that stride, it really sucked you in. Kenobi did the same way. It just had that stride come in probably a little bit later than Andor.
Yeah. But no,
both series were outstanding.
Yeah. It was a particularly, Andor was just particularly special.
Yeah.
Well, with that, Tom, shall we dive into this week's review of The Bad Batch?
Sure. We're going to be reviewing The Bad Batch Season 3, Episode 8, Bad Territory. This was directed by Nate Villanueva and written by Matt Miknovitz. In this episode, The Bad Batch team up with an old acquaintance to help with what's going on with Omega. Or to find out what is going on with Omega, because that's the biggest thing about this episode, is they're trying to figure out what is an M count and how can they find the way to figure it out.
Yes, because unlike us, right, we're fans, we get this stuff. They don't really know. They're not. They don't know what the M count is. They don't know why the Empire wants her, and what it means. And so I'm glad they're starting to dive into this more, right? They're not really shying away from the M count. They're starting that investigation and diving in and meeting some old friends along the way. We get some really familiar faces again. You know, this being the final season, they have to bring back a bunch of the characters we've grown to know and love over the three seasons. But yeah, it's nice to see Fi Genoa back briefly, and even more importantly, Fennec Shand.
That was kind of teased it was going to happen anyway. But
it was.
Might as well have it in this episode, because this one appears to make sense, because they need somebody to help them track down where to go from point A to point B. And since Fi basically gave them the information to go to Fennec Shand, Fennec Shand is in this episode going to help them get to the next step.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Fi discovers, you know, she starts by helping them look into the MCAL situation.
Right.
And she discovers that there's bounty hunters that have been hired to abduct people with high midichlorian counts. I'm just going to say it, midichlorian counts.
Well,
And that's why they decide, okay, we got to find Fennec Shand, right? And even though she did, not really sure you can trust her, maybe she's their best shot at a lead, and so that's why they go after and try to find Fennec Shand, and it turns out she's willing to help, but as any good bounty hunter would say, for a price.
There's always that one condition.
I have to say though, I do greatly appreciate, like, does the Empire just have like a bounty board up on the internet somewhere? The Holonet, I guess. Like, M count bounties. No, I haven't hit accept on any of those, but I'm aware of them.
Yeah, and I know exactly. No, the bounty hunters, they talk. Everything. They have their group chat, you know, Bounty Hunters Guild group chat, and hey, you guys, I got a random M count mission. What did you?
Yeah, they have their bars. Really? They have their little secret meeting places. You know, yeah. They talk.
Guys, Jabba only offered me 100,000 credits, but I found out from Boba's getting 200,000. You know.
Not okay. Okay. But yeah, so really this episode is really, it's all about the mission they have to undertake for Fennec in order for her to connect them with bounty hunters who do know, who have been taking bounty jobs and may have more information. And so we kind of really see two plots going on. One is Hunter, Wrecker, and Fennec Shand going after Sylar Saris, the slayer of Ordo Uros. And then the second plot is Crosshair and Omega back at home. You know, we don't really see that much of Omega here, but we do get a little bit of her, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. You know, she's tasked with helping Crosshair get his hand looked at, because as we talked about, something's been going on with his hand, and now we start to get a little more details on that as well. Before we dive into the main plot, maybe we'll start with Omega and Crosshair.
I think that's a smart way to go.
Yeah.
Tom. I really think it's all mental. I really do. I think because the Empire really laid in on him to try and get him to be one of those shadow troopers, it really messed him up. Mm-hmm. So you could probably call it maybe a little bit of PTSD. But I really think it's mental. And to have Omega sit there and try and help him to do the it's great to see meditation and stuff like that within the Star Wars universe. But I really think that's what's going to help him, because he's got to confront whatever demon is inside of him.
Yeah, I
appreciate that we go the full gamut. You know, he starts by going to AZI. You know, they do the brain scan. They're looking to see if there's anything specific that's wrong. Nothing.
And it's bad enough, right? That he's normally an expert sniper, and he's really struggling. And mm-hmm. you can see how that really almost takes a toll on him as well. And you know, he kind of has to trust Omega, even though she's not necessarily able to fix his hand right away. It was neat to see her sharing what she learned from Gunji on Kashyyyk and mm-hmm. try to, you know, meditate and focus on what's going on. And it's another great dynamic where Crosshair is just, he's not very happy about it, but he goes along with it anyway. Mm-hmm. And it kind of helps the two characters grow a little closer together.
And I think from Crosshair's perspective, the hand that's really bothering him, I believe that's his trigger finger.
Yeah.
So that is the one you don't
want to have a problem with.
Right. I mean, you really don't want it to be the hand that you're resting, your barrel on anyway, because you don't want that shaking. But if it's the trigger finger, that makes it worse.
I don't think there's a good way, like a good hand, to not be steady.
No,
which
is very true, you know, but it's probably even worse that it's that hand.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not great. It is not great. And so, it's nice that they're taking some time together and Omega's trying to help. And I'm really curious to see where they take this, right? I suspect, like you, Tom, and they even theorize that in the episode, that it's probably mental, and that we'll see as he kind of recovers from that PTSD, and also just from what he did to his brothers and his family, maybe his hand will start to improve. But it may take a little bit longer in the season before we see that happen.
I know it's crazy, but there's always that one thing to where it could just be an instant that makes it snap everything into focus. mm-hmm. that finally clicks in him to where that all of a sudden goes away. Maybe it's one of those things in which he has to be pushed, as bad as it sounds, to an absolute edge. And it just all of a sudden clicks to where I can't do this anymore. And then he's back to his normal self. I mean, the meditation may help to that point, but in some cases, being pushed to your limit can trigger something to get you back on track.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Well, we'll see. I think this is really his big, this season three is really about him coming to terms with what he's done. And maybe the hand is kind of the more, the physical representation of that and how he can heal. So yeah, we'll see. Yeah. Meanwhile, though, we've got the mission with Fennec Shand, and it is really fun to see Fennec Shand back. Ming-Na, played by Ming-Na Wen, of course, and originally from The Mandalorian. We did see her earlier in The Bad Batch. I hope we get Cad Bane again. That was cool earlier this season. And we last saw
the commercials teased him.
Oh, see, I've been trying to stay away from the
trailers.
Oh, I'm
sorry. Did I spoil
it? No. It's good. It's good.
It was in commercials.
It's fair game. It's fair game. Yeah. But that's great to hear, because I was very excited for Cad Bane. I was like, I hope he comes. But I also don't want to. I was like, I'm going to enjoy. I'm going to go into this fresh. The Fennec Shand, she's back. You know, when we last saw her, she was tasked with kidnapping Omega, and now she's working with Hunter and with Wrecker. So the mission, and we'll talk a little more about Fennec Shand later in a few moments, but the mission, Sylar Saris, the Slayer of Ordo Arris, he apparently took out one of the top bosses in the Haxian Brood and stole a whole cache of credits, and that's why they're going after him. And I have to say, as a fan of the Star Wars Jedi games, it is great to see the Haxian Brood name dropped. We don't actually get to see them in the episode, but it's awesome, especially given how much time you spend fighting the Haxian Brood in Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order and Star Wars Jedi Survivor. I know, Steven, you played the games as well.
Yeah, it is just nice to see them represented, for sure.
Really bringing things together a lot.
Exactly.
Yeah. So they travel. Basically, the rest of the episode is kind of this like swampy, marshy search for Sylar Saris. So they head to this unknown planet. I'm sure once they release the episode guide, we'll find out what the name of the planet it is. But for now, we don't know. And it's kind of like, I don't know, swamp people or something, but it's Star Wars.
The bayou.
Yep, exactly.
There you go.
Yep,
I was going to say, they were going down to the bayou.
Yeah, and it's pretty, it's this noxious atmosphere. It's like a bayou, but way worse, right? Noxious atmosphere, like nasty green water that they actually have to, they rent a boat and start sailing down it, but very soon after, Fennec orders them in right after saying I wouldn't go in the water, but you know, get in there anyway.
Yeah, that's nice. Hey, let's not get you into the water. Oh, by the way, you need to get into the water, and when you get in there, you're gonna have to like disarm mines that are in there so we can float through this place without being blown up.
It's a pretty cool sequence. I enjoyed it, right? Seeing the mines underneath the surface of the water, they have to carefully disarm them one by one.
And what I found fascinating is their armor is that waterproof. I thought that was pretty cool.
And it kind of makes sense, right? Like, it's probably, you know, good for out of atmosphere as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want soggy. I thought it was pretty cool. Soggy armor would just be not pleasant.
Oh, God, no. No.
No. Yeah. But then, of course, you know, it gets way worse when these, again, we don't know the official name, but these alligator-like creatures appear from all directions under the water, and that's just lovely. And so they have to fight them off and try to escape. You know, some fun action.
Yeah, I would not want to be the ones fighting the alligators, but it does let them sneak up on Sylar's base. Oh, I don't know. Is sneak really the right word? Because, like, the bombs didn't go off, but they were shooting a lot. Yeah. But they make it, and they find him.
Yeah.
He hadn't escaped. So, you know.
So yeah, they quietly snuck. Yeah, they quietly snuck by or snuck in. There you go.
Mm. And once again, you know, Hunter and Wrecker are forced to do the dirty work, the literal dirty work, as we saw earlier in the water, while Fennec's just, you know, chilling in the boat and keeping watch.
Well, you had that feeling anyway, because it was a total setup. She was going to use basically them, almost consider them as bait, because she's going to be the one that's actually going to get her bounty. It's not going to be the two of them.
Yeah.
She's only helping them find the information. She's the one that's got to get the bounty herself.
Yeah, it's a good deal for her.
Yeah.
But you know, I enjoyed the action quite a bit in a lot, you know, in this episode, from the sequence in the water disarming the mines and the alligators to now Sylar trying to escape. Right, he attacks. He's in his base. He's able to escape and head underground. Right, and heads to the escape boat. But thankfully, Fennec actually did something and disabled it.
First time all day.
Yeah. But hey, she got the bounty because they were able to stun him and take him in, and that was the end of Sylar Saris. He wasn't particularly hard to take down.
Well, it was Hunter and Wrecker that did the heavy lifting,
right?
All Finnick had to do is just disable something and what, stun him? That was it.
Exactly. I just mean the job itself is relatively straightforward and relatively simple, but it got them the information that they needed. And, you know, it saved some Finnick some time. So she's happy to give him the info. Because I was a little annoyed at first. I'm like, oh, she, as soon as the mission's done, she says, oh, I actually don't have the info with me. I'll have to give it to you later. And my immediate assumption was, we're not going to hear anything about this for another episode or two. But they didn't. They actually addressed it right away, which I appreciated. She contacts them via hologram as soon as she leaves and is like, hey, I got the info for you. Here you go. And turns out there's a... What?
Remains to be seen.
No? Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Do you not trust her or...
No, not particularly. Like, we've got this kind of mysterious call that she makes afterwards, you know? It's...
Okay, so let's discuss that call. Do you think she called the Empire, or do you think she called somebody else?
I would bet somebody else, just because previously she was working for Nalase, right?
Right.
So she seems to not be super tied to the Empire, but.
Mm-hmm. But who else could it be, though? I mean, if Nalase is definitely out of the picture, because Nalase basically is on Tantus. So, who? I mean, I doubt it would be another bounty hunter to go.
I was gonna say it could be Cad Bane, but
yeah, but which
I don't think it's Hemlock.
Would you call Cad? No, I don't think it's Hemlock either.
Agree.
Okay, so
Asajj,
throw this one out there. Possible.
Ooh, that's interesting.
Because I was thinking basically the same thing. Who would have the knowledge of M count? It would have to be, let's say.
Not just
a Jedi?
Who cares?
Like, well, no, who cares? That's true. The Empire, who cares? Is
mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's
Asajj Ventress. Here's why. The next episode is titled The Harbinger. And it's a single episode. Mm-hmm. But the week after that, in 2 weeks, we have another two-parter called Identity Crisis and Point of No Return. And it's the last two-parter of the series. That feels like an Asajj Ventress two-parter, right?
Which I think Steve, right, because I think, didn't we discuss, and Steven, didn't you point out that we were talking about how did Asajj come back after the book in which he basically died on, why am I blanking on the planet?
On Dathomir.
Dathomir, okay, thank you. That we were talking about, she could be a clone.
Or she was buried.
If that is the case, if that could be the case and she is a clone, then the identity crisis episode
would make a lot of sense.
Would make sense.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So if she does show up in the next episode, because that's who Fennec called, and if she technically is a clone, then that would lead into the identity crisis.
So my theory.
Possible.
I like that theory. My theory is we don't see who she called in the next episode next week, but then Asajj Ventress shows up in two episodes. So we have a little bit of a break.
That could also make sense too.
Now, the question is, why is she calling Asajj Ventress? And who created Asajj Ventress? And why is she out there?
Well, and that's
if
the other
she
thing.
Was cloned.
True. But that's the other thing. How would Fennec know, and has Fennec ever come across Asajj Ventress? How would she know who to contact, which is right? How would she know that's the one to contact?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I got a crazier theory.
Okay. What's your crazier theory?
I say it's Ahsoka Tano.
I could see it, but
it's
I don't
a stretch.
Think
it is such a stretch.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if they bring Ahsoka in here.
Okay, because also look at, I'm the guy who sat there and said that Shadow Trooper may be tech. Okay, so
you're betting on the crazy theories, Tom.
I am so betting on the crazy theories but here's the thing: the show is almost over. I mean, not almost over.
Yeah,
the
it's got to
ending.
It's got to be ramping up significantly.
Yeah, yeah. So who's to say that it's ramping up significantly? To this end of this series, I'm throwing curveballs out there and seeing what sticks. Because if you're going to end this thing and end it with a bang, throw in a kitchen sink or two and make it make sense. Yeah. Because in a way, both theories could possibly make sense. I like the one about the Asajj Ventress, though, to where she does show up in the next episode. And that would make sense that the episode after that be Identity Crisis, if theoretically she's a clone.
Right.
But then you've got to ask yourself, how does Fennec know she exists? Fennec has already crossed paths with Ahsoka Tano.
I mean, okay, it's possible she does report them to the Empire, right? Because she does say...
And that's there too.
And then maybe they send Asajj Ventress, because she does say... whoever she's talking to, she tells them, hey, they're looking... They're trying to track down, bounties related to the midichlorian counts.
Right.
They're clones, and I'll send you the coordinates for the batch so you can track them down.
Right.
Who else would want to track down the batch?
Well, okay, I get that too, but why couldn't they send a couple more of the Shadow Troopers? Why couldn't they send the one that was in the last episode? Because pretty sure he went back to Tantis. So why couldn't they send, like, instead of one, send three of them this time? I mean, there's so many possibilities in this, but
okay.
I still think they're ramping up to end this series. You're going to end it with a bang. That's what I see.
Okay, here, I got one more really crazy theory out there for you.
Throw it to me.
There's one character that has been named, or I can't remember if he was explicitly name dropped or very clearly alluded to in some way. That we keep saying, oh, well, is he going to show up in this show, in this series? And I think he has to show up eventually. And that's Boba Fett.
You know what? I was going to...
They already had Daniel Logan play another one of the clones earlier this season.
Yep.
Maybe she's contacting Boba Fett or someone who has connections to Boba Fett. And... he somehow has to do with the Asajj Ventress, right? Because they worked together in the Clone Wars. Or conversely, maybe it leads to Ventress and then she leads them to Boba Fett in some way. I don't know. I think Asajj Ventress and Boba Fett are related, and I'm not like family related, but like
I get it.
It's a lead in some way. One, they're connected in this series in some way. Mm-hmm. I don't know how yet. I don't know why. But that's my theory. And I'm sticking with it.
Steven?
We'll find out.
Yeah, but Steven, do you have any kind of wild theory? I mean, you've already got two of them.
I mean, I don't think
there.
I have anything that can compare to either of you. I don't know. The more I think about it, the more Ahsoka feels potent. Like, I don't know. There's some weird circuitous route where, like, maybe this is how Ahsoka ends up getting back in contact with Rex. But like that just feels like such a roundabout way. Like Rex and Ahsoka already just parted ways not that long ago,
right?
So it feels weird for them to like get looped back together via Fennec Shand through the batch, through Rex back to Ahsoka. So like,
and
it feels too complicated. That's probably the craziest I would get.
And with that, I would agree with you. Because I think that would lessen the reaction of her meeting Rex on Rebels. Because I think that reaction, there was a, well, it still could be a lot of time passed. But now my whole theory about Ahsoka Tano coming back, because I think at this point Ahsoka Tano's in hiding. But then again, it's still that possibility because she was Fulcrum, and she could still be working behind the scenes. So I just,
yeah. I don't know. I think
so
all
many
three are valid. It would be interesting to see us. I mean, Ahsoka doesn't really fit into the series as much. However,
no.
We are seeing, I don't know, maybe they save her for later in the series, but we are seeing like Rex, and Fulcrum would kind of tie into that a little bit. We're you know, this would also be the first animated series where she hasn't shown up. And so maybe they want to include her for that reason. Right. I don't know. I still think it's Asajj Ventress and or Boba Fett, and one leads to the other. But I like the Ahsoka theory. Maybe she pops up later in the season too.
Well, I think we're at a point right now. We have so many crazy theories out there. Somebody's got to come up with a rating of this episode, because if we keep going, who knows what we're going to come up with now. So
Tom,
it's probably going to be easier with a number.
Why don't you start us off?
I'm giving the episode an 8.5. Done. Loved it. Thought it was a good episode. I think it's leading to, as you can tell by the discussion we've had at the end, more questions going into the next episode. But I liked the episode for what it was. 8.5, my 8.5 Womp Rats. Really, those 8.5 Womp Rats, it really wasn't Wrecker and Hunter that was disarming a lot of The 8.5 Womp Rats actually were coming in from a different angle, because what you didn't see is, not only did Fennec Shen, you know, she not only got Wrecker and Hunter to help her, but she had 9 Womp Rats to actually help her come from a different angle, because that way, if the target were to escape a different way, at least there was somebody to get him that way. And as they were coming that direction, the reason why he didn't go that way is because one of them actually triggered the underwater mine. That's why there were 8.5 Womp Rats.
So,
oh my,
that's much more complicated, guys, than I was expecting.
I know. I have been nice to these Womp Rats for the past few episodes. This one had to go this way.
Okay.
So 8.5 Womp Rats, done. Steven, you want to go next?
I can go next. I think I'll give this episode an 8 out of 10. Pretty standard for the Bad Batch in a lot of ways. Like, it's a fairly straightforward episode. I think I actually enjoyed like the B plot here a little bit more with mm-hmm. Omega and Crosshair. I don't know. There's something a little bit missing, I think, for me, for Fennec Shand and, you know, Hunter and Wrecker. Like, maybe not enough like interplay between them. Or maybe just that it was, again, very straightforward. That, like, you know, they go on the swamp, they go down the river, they find their target, they're done. Again, simplifying, but maybe a little more nuance or interesting, like if a chase would have been helpful. But still a solid episode, and I enjoyed it. So yeah, 8 out of 10 Womp Rats. I mean, it's, you know, obviously, I want to say, I keep wanting to say Skylar, and that's not right. Skylar, you know, he's got his base hidden in the bayou, as it were. He's got the mine set up, but his actual other ploy, you know, the other routes were actually protected by extra crocodiles, and he kept them, or alligators, I don't know which ones they are. I'm not going to go that deep, but he kept them, you know, satiated and nearby to guard the river for him with his, you know, supply of Womp Rats, make sure there's food in the water, to keep him around. So that's where, my 8 Womp Rats, 4 and 4 for each, you know, of the 2 other passageways into the base.
Okay. Well, yeah, I guess that just leaves me. I agree, Steven. I think this was a really solid episode. Really, it was nice to see Fennec Shand again. And, you know, it's fun to see the Hunter and Wrecker team up, try to go help Omega. But we still get Omega and Crosshair. Love their dynamic. Yeah, so overall, I'd probably give it 8 Womp Rats out of 10. And, you know, these 8 Womp Rats, the reason why the mines were under the water was actually to fend off the Womp Rats, not the alligators or unsuspecting trespassers. So gotta watch out for those Womp Rats. They're pretty dangerous.
Oh yeah, of course.
Of course. Well, I think that about wraps it up for us for Bad Territory. Next week, we'll be back with our review of The Harbinger. Actually, maybe a couple days late. We'll be going back to reviewing after the episodes air. You know, Lucasfilm only provided the first 8 episodes of the series, so we'll be watching at the same time as all of you. Very excited to see what happens next, because we have... there's so many ways they could take this. Is Asajj Ventress going to show up? We know she is, but how is she going to show up? Are we going to see Boba Fett, Ahsoka? What's going to happen with Omega and the M count? Are they going to save her? There's a lot they have to cover in the last 7 episodes of the series. So, yeah, thank you all for listening. And we'll be back in just over a week with our review of The Harbinger.
Thank you for listening to the Ion Cannon Podcast, your source for entertainment reviews from a galaxy far, far away. For over a decade, Ion Cannon has covered every corner of the saga, from the films and animated series like The Clone Wars and Rebels, to books, comics, games, and more. If you like what you hear, please rate us in your favorite podcast client. Your review will help this show grow within the Star Wars community. We can be found at our website, ioncannoncast.com, and you can follow us through Facebook and Twitter. To email us, you can do so at contact@ioncannoncast.com. The Ion Cannon Podcast is not associated with Lucasfilm, the Walt Disney Company, or any and all of their respective trademarks or copyright holders. Any opinion expressed on the show are that of the hosts. This podcast is a production by fans, for fans, and is copyright 2018.